Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scoop. I'm your host, Frank Chaparro, Director of Special Projects at The Block. And we're joined on the other side of the mic by Luke Youngblood. Thank you so much for taking the time, sir. Longtime listener, I guess, first time caller. You guys had some interesting news with Coinbase launching its smart wallets. You guys obviously serving as a partner, Moonwell. Let's maybe dive into straight into the news. I've been hearing through the grapevine, and at least on Twitter, right, that this is almost a watershed moment for crypto UX. And we were talking before we turned on the mics about helping some of our more gray relatives navigate this wonky and often pedantic world of crypto. And hopefully this ameliorates that process. But let's maybe, for folks who are unfamiliar with the firm, let's give them a breakdown and then we can get to this news about this new effortless, gas-free on-chain experience.
Thanks, Frank. It's great to be here. Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. So let me talk a little bit about Moonwell first. Moonwell is an open lending and borrowing protocol on Base. We're also in the Polkadot ecosystem. That's where we started. We're the largest app in Polkadot. But Moonwell is this open lending protocol that's on-chain on Base and other networks, Moonbeam and Moonriver. And it allows anyone to just, supply and borrow their digital assets. We feel really strongly in the Moonwell community about, empowering everyone with the tools of on-chain finance, or as we used to call it, DeFi. This is one of those, core primitives that allows people to do more with what they already have. And then I used to work at Coinbase for a few years before I founded Moonwell. I'm a founding contributor to Moonwell. I'm one of many contributors, both professional and community-based contributors. My experience at Coinbase was sort of my first intro to DeFi and on-chain finance. I could talk more about that if you will.
Yeah. So Coinbase, right? You sort of pioneered a lot of the staking efforts. You sort of joined, I guess, somewhat of an acqui-hire. Walk us through that journey and sort of how it sort of provides the foundation for your role now.
So I've been working in tech for a couple decades as a software engineer, most recently at Amazon Web Services before Coinbase. I was a principal engineer there. Helped a lot of large customers like Apple migrate to the cloud and helped build and design the backend for Apple iCloud. But my brother and I have both been crypto hobbyists since the early days. I was mining Bitcoin in 2011 on my gaming PC. And my brother was in the Ethereum pre-sale, and him and I were hacking on Ethereum back in 2014, 2015. We actually had this opportunity pop up in early 2018 where the Tezos network was about to launch. It was one of the first proof of stake networks. And they were about 6 months away from launch. They had no infrastructure, and the Tezos Foundation needed to stake 20% of the supply. So my brother was actually president of like the Utah Blockchain Association. It's a local community group. And Ryan, who was the president of Tezos Foundation at the time, asked him, he said, "Do you know anyone that's good at cloud stuff at AWS? Because we're about to launch the network. We have no infra." So Carl, my brother, he said, "You should talk to Luke. He works at AWS." And so that's how we began our journey in a professional sense. And fast forward 6 months, we were, part of the Tezos network launch. We flew to Paris for a few weeks and spent time with the developers there and took some time off work and actually helped them launch the network. Later that year, Coinbase reached out to me because they had heard, they had wanted to get into staking for their institutional customers. And so in the Coinbase custody business, they were very interested in staking on all these proof of stake networks for their institutional clients. And so Arthur and Kathleen, the founders of Tezos, had recommended us for our work for them. And so that was how I got acqui-hired into Coinbase in 2018. And I worked at Coinbase for about 3 years. And while I was there, I was the lead engineer on a number of staking rewards products, including retail and institutional. And I helped launch Ethereum Staking Rewards in 2020. That was the biggest project I worked on. So it was really quite the journey. And then as I was working in Coinbase, I started getting really into DeFi in DeFi Summer.
Yeah, that brings us back to when 2021, or was it before? It was after the pandemic. was when DeFi had its moment.
Yeah. So in late 2019, that was my first experience with DeFi. We had this hackathon at Coinbase HQ in San Francisco. And the Compound team with Robert Leshner actually came in to HQ. This was when we were still in person before COVID. They came into the Coinbase HQ and they were hacking with us for a week. And we helped build this price feed that became the first price oracle for Compound when V2 launched in 2020. And basically the idea we had was, you know, Coinbase has on the Pro exchange at the time, it was called Coinbase Pro, used to be GDAX. They have all these markets, you know, like USDC, Bitcoin, Ethereum, et cetera, DAI. What if we took the price data from those markets and then we signed it with a Ethereum private key that Coinbase controlled that was very secure? And then Compound could use that data on chain for their price feeds to help understand whether a position should be liquidatable or not. And so we built this Compound price feed, or we called it the Compound open price feed in a week. It was a hackathon project. And then that's what Compound launched with when they launched V2, which sort of kicked off DeFi summer in early 2020. And when Compound V2 launched, I really went down the DeFi rabbit hole and I started experimenting with on-chain finance for the first time. And it was this fascinating like light bulb moment for me, because for the first time, I could actually wrap my Bitcoin that I had mined years ago and I could bring it onto Ethereum and I could supply it and I could borrow against it and I could use all these DeFi protocols that were just starting, you know, protocols like Balancer, which was a DEX, Yearn Finance, Curve, which is another DEX. It was really fascinating to me. And I went down that rabbit hole. I actually created a Slack group at Coinbase while I was there called Social DeFi. And that Slack group eventually in 2021, when things got really hot in the bull market, that became the second largest Slack group. There were thousands of Coinbase employees in there, second largest next to General. And so you can imagine how much alpha was in that channel. It was a really fun experience. We were all experimenting with new on-chain protocols and, you know, helping each other learn. I used to run DeFi lunch and learns at Coinbase. And where I would share like, you know, strategies and kind of help educate people on how to use DeFi.
I guess it's safe to say that you helped sort of make on-chain a core component of the Coinbase DNA.
I think so.
It's impressive how far they've gone since those earlier days. It's always nice to take little strolls down memory lane. So I guess that sort of parlays well into the topic du jour, which is the launch of smart wallets. Can you just give us a rundown of the product and juxtapose it with the traditional wallet experience with which people might be accustomed?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way a smart wallet works that's different from something like a Coinbase mobile wallet or MetaMask that you're probably familiar with is that there's no private key or seed phrase to back up. Like that's the typical onboarding friction with MetaMask or Coinbase wallet is that you have to back up this 12-word seed phrase. Yeah, you have to write it down somewhere. You have to make sure you never lose it. If your device breaks and you lost that seed phrase, you might lose all your money. And so that's been a really painful onboarding experience, especially for people that are not crypto natives, right? That people like your mother or your family members, your friends that might want to experiment with on-chain finance, but are really afraid of like losing their savings. And so it's been this painful onboarding experience, but what enables a smart wallet to be different than that is this new technology called a passkey. And this passkey technology has actually been built by some really solid tech companies like Apple, Google, 1Password, Yubico. There's this whole consortium called the FIDO Alliance where all the big tech players have kind of come together and said, we need a better solution than passwords because passwords get lost. People forget them. These password managers like LastPass even get hacked. And people are losing their passwords. It's become a big source of friction in Web 2, not just Web 3. And so these passkeys actually enable us for the first time to sign with a private key that's on your device in a secure enclave and is automatically backed up to the cloud in a secure way by some of the best companies in the world, like Apple and Google. And now you can onboard and create a wallet without actually downloading any apps, downloading an extension, and you don't even have to back up a seed phrase. So we've kind of eliminated all those points of friction and you can just onboard to crypto and use on-chain apps in just a few seconds.
Yeah. So what's sort of the security parameters around that?
Great question. So, you know, if you think about, there are some apps out there, mostly SocialFi and GameFi apps that you might have tried that have what's called an embedded wallet. And so these apps, you log in with your Google or your Facebook ID or your email or maybe even an SMS message sent to your phone. And then that app can do things on chain for you. But the difference there is you're sort of delegating control to that third party, right? They actually store your private keys for you and you're just logging in with Google or with Facebook. But those private keys are stored by them. And so it's not really that secure. In fact, those embedded wallets kind of become this honeypot of that hackers want to attack, because if there's value in them, it could be billions of dollars in some of these embedded wallets, right? So it becomes a big target for hackers. Whereas the difference is with the passkey, Coinbase doesn't actually store your private key, and your private key actually stays on your device in the secure enclave. And then it is uploaded in like an encrypted format to iCloud through iCloud Keychain. You can read some great details on Apple's support site about how they secure those. But Apple and Google, I think, have some of the best security in the world because they've had to protect this data from, you know, like nation state actors and really bad people that want to compromise it. And I think they're more well equipped to kind of secure these pass keys than any other provider. You know, so it, for example, to steal your iCloud pass key, someone would have to trick you into, you know, adding a new device to your iCloud account, and you would have to agree. Also, Apple requires you to enable two-factor authentication before you can even sync your pass keys to the cloud. So someone would have to trick you into like adding their own iPhone or iPad to your iCloud account in order to compromise your passkeys.
So are there any, you know, if you were to think through some of the security drawbacks of the new design, what maybe during the sort of building process, what maybe drawbacks kind of cropped up and how did you remedy them?
There's some challenges that we've noticed with this, with these new passkeys. One is that because they're so incredibly easy to create, in all of our testing, I probably have a half a dozen of them that I've created just as test accounts across various devices to test our apps and to test other on-chain apps. And so it can become a little bit confusing to remember which one is which. Like, which one did I use for this app? Because the way they're named right now is like smart wallet with a date you created. So I feel like there's an improvement Coinbase could make on the wallet side to actually allow you to customize the name of them, because you might have one wallet you want to use for your finance. You might have another one you want to use for online games, maybe a third one you want to use for social networks. And so I feel like there's some usability improvements we could make, because inevitably people are going to create a few of these and they'll forget which one they put their money into. But as long as, you know, as long as you have them all accessible to you, you can figure that out. It's more of a usability and user experience issue. That's one issue we've noticed. And then another one is just, I guess, if you were to create, let's say you have like a Windows PC, you haven't ever connected it to any online service like Microsoft Cloud or Azure or whatever they use for syncing, that passkey might be on your local device. And if that PC breaks, you might lose access to your funds. But I think that's solved as long as you have at least two devices that are like, you know, connected to each other, you know, maybe a mobile phone and a computer or a mobile phone and a tablet. Then as long as you don't, you know, lose and break all those devices at once, or, you know, you have access to the cloud, you should be good. You should be able to, walk into an Apple or a Google store, get a brand new device off the shelf, sync it up to your existing cloud with credentials, and then have your passkeys restored in a matter of minutes.
So how do you view this as a milestone for building out, enhancing the on-chain economy?
That's a good question. I think the challenges to, so if you think about all the onboarding friction that current on-chain apps have today, most of, we did some usability studies early last year where we actually filmed users trying to use our app for the first time. And it was really fascinating to watch people. We just had them record their screen and send us the videos and, you know, talk through what they're doing as they try to use our app for the first time. And we had both crypto people that use crypto apps and non-crypto people that have never used a crypto app try it. And what we saw was really shocking. So, for example, NFT collectors who actually use crypto every day and have used apps like OpenSea struggled with our app, because they would load our app and they would say, okay, I have Ethereum in my wallet and I want to, it looks like I can supply Ethereum, but it's not showing up here. Well, because they hadn't bridged it and it was on mainnet and our app was on Base. So that was one friction pain point. Even crypto native people couldn't figure out how to bridge their funds. And then a lot of other friction came up, like, okay, I don't have a wallet. I'm not a crypto person. What app do I download? Where do I go? Do I download MetaMask? Do I download Coinbase wallet? Okay, how do I set this thing up? How do I back up my seed phrase? And so all of those pain points and friction points are basically where when customers come to your website or your app for the first time, they'll be stuck and they won't be able to continue. And so that's why, you know, today there's only a few tens of thousands of users actually actively using DeFi, maybe hundreds of thousands or so. But with this onboarding experience where I can go to a website, I can create a wallet in seconds, and I can immediately begin using the app. And maybe I even have ETH in my Coinbase account. There's a feature called Magic Spend. Let's say I want to go to OpenSea and just buy some NFTs. So now I can go from zero to one, create a wallet in seconds, link it with my Coinbase account, which is optional, by the way. You don't have to do that if you want to remain anonymous. And then I can immediately begin buying NFTs and art on OpenSea, or buying meme coins on a DEX, or using a lending protocol like Moonwell. And so that's the big unlock that we think is going to bring millions of users on chain. And Coinbase has about 8 million monthly active users. They call them monthly transacting users. So those are people that are buying and selling Coinbase or using the app in some way every month. And we think those 8 million monthly transacting users are going to all want to try these on-chain apps because it's just such a rich world of experiences that aren't available beyond just trading crypto.
There's one element here of making it easier for folks to access the on-chain economy. If that opens up, right, like if it's easier for people to engage with these different applications, that likely incentivizes new applications to come to market because they have an audience there. They have a customer base that can access what they're building, what they're doing. How do you think about how simplified, easier wallet access could lead to an uptick in the number of crypto apps coming to market?
I think that's definitely going to lead to a lot more developers building on-chain apps. And we're already seeing that in the Base community because you've probably seen some of Jesse Pollock's content. He's the creator of Base at Coinbase. It's very inspiring to see him talk to other builders and other developers in the space. And there are so many people building on Base right now. There's a giant like build-a-thon going on this summer where developers can earn, you know, rewards for building on-chain apps. There's a whole bunch of really cool websites like buildonchainapps.xyz that actually give you open source code that show you exactly how to use these new wallets and how to build a really nice web app that everyone can access on chain. And then Coinbase also has this Base gasless campaign going where they will actually sponsor fees for your app. So new builders actually, they can build an experience that their users don't even have to acquire ETH to actually pay for gas and fees, which is another big friction point. And this is something that I think was really inspiring to me and also to a lot of other builders and why we came to Base early, because we saw that Coinbase was going to build the best developer experience. So, you know, to give you a little bit of history again, when I was at Coinbase, after we launched Ethereum staking, I really wanted to launch a DAO while I was at Coinbase. We wanted to launch a liquid staking DAO similar to Lido, where our customers could wrap their ETH, like CB ETH, you know, stake it, and then bring it on chain. And the challenge we ran into was regulatory challenges. You know, Coinbase is a publicly traded company. They can't really launch DAOs in a safe way. But what Jesse has done, and I was talking to Jesse at the time, I said, you know, Jesse was forming this DAO incubator in Coinbase where they're going to try to figure out how to legally launch DAOs. Jesse, to his credit, though, came up with a better solution, which is, why don't we launch Base as a layer two on Ethereum, and then everyone can launch on-chain apps, you know, and that was why a lot of Coinbase alumni, like I, left to go build on-chain apps. We were able to come back into the mothership, if you will, and start building on-chain apps on Base. And so you'll see like a lot of Coinbase alumni like myself, you know, there's probably dozens of us out there building on-chain apps on Base right now. And I know many of the many founders that I used to work with that are doing this. And so just like you have the PayPal mafia, so to speak, out there, you know, building cool new companies like Elon building Tesla, I think you're going to see the Coinbase Mafia out there building lots of on-chain apps on Base. And it gives Coinbase this platform, this developer platform that they didn't have before to attract the best, you know, builders in the space. And with their scale and retail distribution, they can just offer better distribution than any other ecosystem out there, right? The 8 million monthly transacting users, the smart wallets, the gas sponsorship, those are all things that, you know, Coinbase can uniquely do that maybe other platforms in the space can't do.
Do you reckon there's a category of apps that are maybe most primed for the on-chain world, Web3? Is there a specific type of use case that might be most appropriate from what you're seeing? From maybe if we were to look at these 12 folks that, you know, that to what you're referring, what are they? What type of applications are they building? Is there a red hot category, or is it myriad diverse?
Let me give you two examples that I think you might have heard of. So the first one is Farcaster, right? Dan Romero was a Coinbase alumni, and him and his whole team have actually been building Farcaster since 2016. They actually left Coinbase before I even joined. But they've built this incredible social network on top of Optimism and Base on the Superchain that has a few hundred thousand users today. And it's a decentralized social network. People can actually tip each other in crypto. You can actually do on-chain actions in what's called a Farcaster frame. They're making it so you can do things like vote in Optimism, retro PGF governance through Farcaster, through the Warpcast app. And so these type of applications like SocialFi, where basically now transactions are free, you know, SocialFi never used to really work on Ethereum because who wants to pay, you know, a few dollars to write a post, or who wants to pay, you know, even a few cents on a layer two to like a post or retweet it or something, right? And so you can imagine that now that we have the ability to sponsor gas for all of our users, it can work just like a Web2 app. There's no friction, and that people can use these SocialFi apps and not have to worry about paying fees for every little operation they do in the app. And then another category that I'm seeing that's really empowering, not just on-chain finance. I mean, I could talk my own book all day, but is GameFi. So another example there is FriendPet on Base. FriendPet is a little like Tamagotchi-like app. If you remember those little Tamagotchi digital characters you used to have that you would have to feed them or they would die, it's just like that. You know, you come back and you feed your little pet, or you get a unique on-chain pet. And that kind of GameFi experience where you might want to go on-chain and do like a dozen or, you know, a couple hundred operations every day, maybe you're trading in-game items, things like that. Those are going to be enabled by this type of infrastructure that the smart wallet offers.
Mm. So GameFi, SocialFi, having a bit of a moment.
Exactly. I think it's going to have a huge moment this next cycle. And then, you know, of course, the other thing is really just these DEXs, decentralized exchanges, NFT marketplaces, where now people can actually access your, you know, your digital marketplace, and they can buy and sell everything directly from their Coinbase account. Because, you know, if you think about someone like, you know, a distant relative that wants to try crypto for the first time, they might trust Coinbase because Coinbase is the most trusted exchange, and perhaps they have Bitcoin or Ethereum they hold on Coinbase. But for many of them, moving their funds into an on-chain wallet is a scary experience, right? And so if you said, okay, well, you can try on-chain, but you got to move all your Ethereum on-chain to your wallet. Well, a lot of them would rather just keep that in their Coinbase account, but still be able to buy digital art on OpenSea, or still be able to maybe buy a meme coin like Degen on a DEX like Uniswap or Aerodrome, which is like the top DEX on Base. And so I think this is going to sort of make it so that on-chain is less scary for a lot of people, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not just, it's an element of it being scary. And there's also just an element of it being complex and esoteric. Right. I mean, but it's getting better. I mean, if you think about bridging like 2-3 years ago compared to now, it's night and day. And we're just heading down this path of simplification.
There's this saying that I've heard, you know, Jesse and others saying that lately is like the best on-ramp is no on-ramp, right? If you can just make it so there's no need to on-ramp funds to your on-chain wallet, you just, you know, use them directly from your Coinbase balance. I think that's the ideal state, right?
Yeah, we're getting there. Maybe let's take some time to talk about Moonwell and its position in the nascent crypto lending category. What is the state of on-chain or DeFi lending?
So today, you're probably familiar with the big players like the Aaves and the Compounds of the world. And we're very similar to the Aaves and Compounds. We have the same sort of base level protocol where it's permissionless, it's decentralized. Meanwhile, DAO is governed by over 5,000 token holders on Base. So we have many contributors, including my company, Lunar Labs. We build the front end, the web and mobile app you see when you use the app. And we build a lot of the data services that read the on-chain data and provide those beautiful graphs and charts in the app that you see. And then we have other contributors to Moonwell, like Solidity Labs building smart contract infrastructure, Halborn doing audits, Gauntlet and Warden Finance are doing active risk management in our markets. But the way that I kind of think about, and this is what really inspired us to build Moonwell in the first place, was I was really inspired by the ability to get with on-chain money markets. Because if you think about how democratizing finance and making it accessible to everyone in the world, how empowering that could be. Because what I looked at was, today in traditional financial markets, you have the wealthy, the accredited investors have access to all these financial services that normal people don't have access to, like retail. You can't really borrow against your portfolio if you're a retail investor. But if you're an accredited investor, you're a high net worth individual, if you're someone like a Bill Gates or Jeff Bezos or an Elon Musk, most of these people don't ever sell their stocks or bonds. They simply borrow against them to buy houses, to buy cars, to pay for bills in the real world. And they pay very low interest rates. And it's almost unfair compared to a retail investor that's not accredited, doesn't have access to margin at their brokerage, doesn't have the ability to borrow against their assets. And so what I saw with on-chain finance that was really inspiring was that for the first time in history, you had this ability to let everyone in the world borrow against their assets and do things. Like, for example, what if you've invested in Bitcoin years ago and your Bitcoin is appreciated in value? You'd like to take out a loan to build, remodel your house or something. Why shouldn't you be able to do that? Or maybe start a business. Why shouldn't you be able to take out a loan to help start a business? But for many people, especially in developing countries where they don't have access to banking services, places like South America, Africa, parts of Asia, they don't have those abilities to, take out a loan or to do more with their digital assets. And in many of these countries in South America and Africa, especially, we see really strong stablecoin adoption because they actually want a currency that is like easy to use for payments, for transacting between people, and doesn't get inflated away like their local currency. So you see really strong use of Tether and USD coin and other stablecoins in these developing markets. And we wanted to give people the ability to lend and borrow those assets. So we got together in the early days of Moonwell, and we thought about what is our vision and what is our mission? And our vision, we defined it as a team. We were like, our vision is to bring the power of on-chain finance and governance to the world. And our vision is a world where governance and finance are powered by Web3, right? And our mission is to just bring the most accessible financial products to everyone, wherever you are, regardless of your ability level. And the ability level was really key for us because what we saw is that early DeFi had so much potential, but like the early days of the internet, it was really only accessible to high net worth people in developed countries like in America. You could only use DeFi if you had a computer, some desktop only experience, and transaction fees were $50 to $100 on Ethereum mainnet. So you had to be a whale basically to use on-chain finance. And so it was really kind of locking out the vast majority of these people in developing countries that couldn't access it. Maybe they just had a mobile device. Maybe they just had a few hundred dollars to their name. They didn't have thousands of dollars to invest on chain. And they would be paying, 25% of their whole net worth on gas fees. So with the creation of Ethereum Layer 2s and EIP 4844, which just launched a few months ago, EIP 4844 reduced transaction costs significantly down to the one penny range for most transfers of funds and for payments. And then with the now the 436 ERC 4377 account abstraction, which enables smart contract wallets and enables things like paymasters that can pay your gas fees and sponsor gas for users, now all of a sudden we have the technology to actually offer low cost, sub 1 cent transactions that are paid for by a paymaster And all these new applications like payments, commerce, and on-chain finance are now accessible to everyone, no matter where you are in the world. And so in the Moonwell community, we strongly believe in building these accessible tools. For example, we translated our app into 5 different languages, including English, Spanish, Portuguese, Chinese, and Korean, because we also saw that most DeFi apps are English only. So that's another barrier to entry. You know, if you're in South Korea, you should be able to read the app in your native language. And then we have a community of contributors that actually translate into the local languages. We have German and Italian coming soon. And many of these are just volunteer community contributors that contribute. We give them a text file with a whole bunch of language in our app, and they translate every string in our app into their own language. And then we just incorporate that into our front end.
I think one interesting aspect of what you said is just a sort of the extent to which on-chain allows people to leverage their finances in the same, or leverage their assets in the same way that the ultra wealthy are able to. And that's one interesting juxtaposition. There's another interesting juxtaposition, which is, if you think about, even if you have, if you're credit worthy and have access to financial services here in the Western world, it's still incredibly opaque. And the parameters around things like credit worthiness are often, you know, opaque and unclear, right? I mean, different sort of agencies have different types of credit scores for folks. Even if in applying for a bank account, you know, there are things that you can get denied for without any reason or sort of clarity around that application and potential denial. Whereas on-chain, everything is relatively transparent. And you can sort of, and there is no friction aside from, the UX friction. So it's fascinating, right? Because with on-chain, you have this UX problem, but the underpinning infrastructure is very clear, digestible, easy to understand. And in traditional finance, UX is easy, simple. Some banks have better customer service phone lines than others, but the actual underpinning, you know, thing that that's keeping it all together is horrific, and not very transparent. And so it'll be interesting to see how sort of maybe those two things converge in a sense. For crypto specifically, I'm curious, and maybe this is where we can sort of leave things off. How long until smart wallets are the standard?
I think it's going to happen pretty rapidly. That's a good question, though. Because if I'm sure people will still use regular wallets like MetaMask and Coinbase Wallet. In fact, a lot of power users like myself, we still use Ledger hardware wallets and other types of like multi-sigs and more complex things. But those people will always, the power users will always have those, you know, traditional wallets or traditional custody solutions like Fireblocks and Coinbase Custody and others, Coinbase Prime. But that being said, they will be vastly outnumbered, I think, by all of the new millions of retail users that are going to be using smart wallets. And for most retail users where it's a single player experience where you don't have, you know, maybe a consortium of multi-sig signers at your hedge fund that need to all sign off on operations, the passkey is a vast improvement. And I think you'll even see some of those traditional, you know, institutional custody solutions adopting passkeys because it's better. Now all their GPs can just carry around phones instead of having to sign on their computers. So I think we'll rapidly see, you know, there'll still be a few hundred thousand hardcore users using traditional wallets, but we'll see several millions and eventually a billion plus people using passkeys on everything.
A billion plus. One day, Luke.
That's the vision.
Thanks so much for joining the program.
Yeah, thank you, Frank, for having me. It's been great to talk to you a little bit about smart wallets and about our journey on Moonwell.
Where can people learn more if they're keen?
So you can, if you're a developer building on Base, go to smartwallet.dev and you can learn all about the Base Gasless campaign there and also read all about smart wallets. If you want to try Moonwell and experience on-chain finance in a really easy-to-use application, go to moonwell.fi and you can get started right away.
Perfect. Dankeschön.